Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My next guest has a pretty boring office job. He works 9 to 5, sometimes goes in on weekends. So you know what? I got the wrong intro here. No, my next guest is an environmental anthropologist and one-time National Geographic Explorer of the Year. I'm talking about cave diver Kenny Broad. Kenny Broad takes his work seriously because he goes to places that we can't. And one false move, and well, Kenny Broad wouldn't be here tonight. Broad's explored everything from venomous snakes in Vietnam to underwater caves in the Bahamas, and he's worked on every single continent on this planet. Intrigued? Kenny Broad is in Chicago for a conversation at the Goodman Theater tomorrow night, part of the National Geographic Live series. The event is called The Risky Science of Exploration, and he is in studio tonight. Kenny Broad, thanks for being here. I appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, Justin.
Environmental anthropologist. What is that? When I think of you, I think explorer, right? I mean, what's an environmental anthropologist?
It's a great title for someone with attention deficit disorder because if you get stuck in one subject, you can switch to another, and you can go from the physical sciences to what I would argue are the harder sciences, the social sciences, where you have to deal with people and how the two interact. Because they really are connected.
I want to ask the simple question, but why did you want to be an explorer? But even more, I read in your bio you've done some commercial diving in your life. Talk about that. Talk about the idea of, as an adult, how you got into this work.
I think it's easy after the fact to make it sound rational, but the bottom line was I grew up in South Florida, so part of it is just circumstances where you're surrounded by water, and you're not just surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean on one side and actually the Everglades, which is a water-filled swamp on the other, but you have water beneath you. So we're on this thin, porous layer of limestone, and all our groundwater is beneath our feet. So, you know, it's sink or swim, and you know, I was able to ride my bike to the beach. It's free, and once you stick your head in the water with a pair of goggles, at least for me, it opened up a whole nother world.
It's amazing. I mean, to look at do the research and I mean, all the stuff is available on YouTube, and you can see all the PowerPoint presentations you've done and some of the footage that you've collected. When you think about this, I mean, it seems like this is the final frontier when it comes to exploring. I mean, you are going into underwater caves and places that have never been touched before. I mean, as an explorer, do you start to, as you continue to do this work, just be like, all right, what has nobody done?
I guess as I tell my students at the University of Miami, if you can't be smart, be first. So that's kind of been my approach. And then I just surround myself with smart people and try to get us all into a place that we don't know much about. And underwater caves, that you could probably make an argument they're one of the least explored ecosystems on our planet, and probably for that reason one of the least understood. And there's lots of reasons to study them from scientific standpoints, but just from a purely selfish human standpoint, if you take away the water that's locked up in ice, more than 95% of the world's groundwater, that's our fresh drinking water, is beneath our feet, and it's out of sight, out of mind, so we tend not to protect it properly.
For you, going into those spaces, I mean, it seems you had a whole piece about passion versus risk, and I mean, these are not sanitized for your protection. I mean, these are entirely dangerous places with one false move and you get yourself caught. I mean, claustrophobia alone, I know I could. I can't speak for Pete, but I feel like that alone would be enough for me to say, all right, you know what? Someone put a camera down there, right?
I'm glad to hear that because it's good for job security for me. And I would be afraid if I had to host your show. So we'll stick to
talk
our jobs.
About that. I mean, there is this passion versus risk. I mean, there's a lot of risk involved in this job. This is not a job that you walk away from unscathed.
There's a certain degree of cognitive dissonance or denial where, you know, if you put the risk at the center of it, you probably wouldn't do it. But the truth is, we all consider ourselves risk managers in this business. And objectively, a lot of times we worry about the cave-ins, the claustrophobia, the multiple failures of equipment. And those are the dramatic ones, the ones that come to mind. But objectively, the closer calls we've had, it's the car ride there. It's driving in foreign highways or even worse, driving where I live in South Florida.
I think about Discovery Channel and some of the different cable channels that will host shows with explorers, whether it be, people who are on the high seas or, fishermen or any sort of extreme seem kind of naturalist. You know, when you see that, it's everything is high stakes and high energy because they pump that stuff up for the television. They have to have conflict and say, is it like, as an explorer, as someone who is going into places we've never seen before, is it like that? I mean, is it heart pounding, edge of your seat, commercial break kind of exploring?
No, that's exactly what you want to avoid, especially underwater, but even on the surface. Once you get your heart rate up, then your respiration rate goes up, and then all your diving gases go away quickly. So it's really more a mental game, and you're better off practicing, you know, yoga and meditation and visualization than you are, you know, pumping iron and getting macho. But I will say, what happens is you get these kind of, you really want boredom on an expedition, but things do happen. You put yourself in these situations, so you've got, it's all about training for those low probability, but sort of high impact challenges that come around.
Well, we're talking with Kenny Broad. He is an explorer and an environmental anthropologist. He's one-time National Geographic Explorer of the Year. He's going to be at the Goodman Theater tomorrow night. The event is called The Risky Science of Exploration. It's put on by National Geographic Live. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back and we'll do more with Kenny Broad here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, the explorer, the environmental anthropologist, Kenny Broad, one-time National Geographic Explorer of the Year. He is in town for a conversation at the Goodman Theater tomorrow night. The event is called The Risky Science of Exploration, put on by National Geographic Live. Starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow night at the Goodman. You know, we're talking about this concept of what we know to be exploration really being hyped up by the media or people putting together cable shows about this stuff and the reality of it. I have to ask a question because you mentioned a little bit earlier about the idea of underwater caves are really the least explored part of our world. Are there parts of our world that explorers have never touched? I mean, are we out? Are explorers having to go around again for a second time now?
Not only are there places that are we know very little about, so the bottom of the ocean, and you know the analogy is we know more about the moon, the surface of the moon, than the bottom of the ocean. Certainly underwater caves in general, but there's a lot of places that we can now go back to where we've been, but we have new techniques, whether it's low-cost DNA analysis, whether it's all different sorts of scientific analytical techniques, and we have a much different purpose where before. And I think this is what differentiates adventure from exploration. Before, let's get to the top, just get to the top, or the deepest point to get to the deepest point. But we tend to go now with missions, and they tend to be about understanding the world we live in and geared towards some kind of modern problem, whether it's water management, whether it's climate change.
So there's more conservation. Change. There's more idea of looking at how this affects the planet or what's happening with the planet as opposed to just race to the top.
Yeah, definitely more of an applied science. And that, again, that goes back to your other question. These are expeditions that are highly planned, choreographed. These aren't thrill-seeking, adrenaline-junkie sorts of endeavors.
But, I mean, just the fact that, you know, you're in a space that's as big as this, the desk I'm sitting at, and you're wiggling yourself through. I mean, there is something to be said about, yes, there is high stakes on this. It's not just boredom. There's something that's extremely, extremely dangerous.
Sure. I mean, I will admit that if you put yourself in a water-filled hole with no oxygen and only one way in, one way out, and you lose all visibility, it has its risks.
You've had a tremendous career, not only doing underwater stuff. You've done other things too, like chasing venomous snakes in Vietnam, and actually doing, you know, anthropology at the level of tracking cocaine and cocaine smugglers and producers and dealers in Jamaica. I mean, you've done so many different things. Is there a type of exploration that you like more than the other?
I think it's the diversity, and that's what's great about the field of anthropology. It really is truly interdisciplinary, and you can go from the physical sciences to the natural sciences. You can go from esoteric, you know, philosophical, moral problems about how we manage our resource. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to say don't cut down the trees, but if those are the trees that sustain people's livelihoods by being able to just cook their food in the most basic sense, we really need to understand the cultural side as well as the physical side.
There's so much that's happening, you know, when I think of the world, even the stories that you covered, you know, whether it be drugs in Jamaica or snakes in Vietnam, you know, when doing this kind of stuff, what do you have to do to prepare for any sort of mission? I mean, is it months and months of academic research to get ready to go into an underwater cave, or is it more like, cave, jump?
Well, I have to admit, if I see a cave, I'm willing to jump, just because that's my main thing. But certainly for the topics where you have, you know, it's a new research subject, the most important thing is the background research by getting in touch with the people who've done the work there, and by really working out who are the local communities who live around there, what's a fair partnership to work with mm-hmm. them on this problem, because we're not going to reinvent the wheel. These are people, you know, who've adapted to their circumstances, who are most affected by it. So this, you know, the colonial idea, the, you know, the white man explorer coming in and
right.
finding it, that, you know, those were naive back then. They're even more ridiculous now.
Well, I was thinking about this today that, you know, a lot of exploration throughout our time, at least in American history, has been documented, whether it be Lewis and Clark or any other explorers. They've come up with maps. They've been able to tell the story of their adventure or their exploration. In your case, technology has increased dramatically in the way that every time you see a picture of you in a cave, you've got a huge camera with you in a video. I mean, a lot of this is about mapping and understanding it for other people to see, not just for you in the moment to see around you. So talk about how technology has changed your job as an explorer.
I think what originally to me was the burden of having to bring cameras along, and I worked with, it's really almost a seamless sort of interaction between scientists, the explorers, and the camera crews. And to get into some of these specialized places like underwater caves, you need explorers who know how to use the cameras,
right.
and et cetera. So it's really interesting, sort of a cross-disciplinary teams where everyone learns and is reliant on each other. So I've learned to sort of embrace it. I would say the challenge is the balance of, you can only get so much done in a day. You only get so many dives. So how much of it do you put into capturing the imagery versus how much goes into the science? And, you know, there's tension on these expeditions, but people understand, hey, if we don't come back with pictures, then people don't learn about it. And people, I think we could all agree, people don't necessarily learn from facts. They learn from how they're emotionally driven. And it's the pictures and the stories that drive people.
Well, I mean, even this series that you're doing, the National Geographic Live, which are on stage tomorrow at the Goodman, that's part of the, say, this is what we've learned. This is sort of take a look at these great pictures we've taken. This is, I can give context to what you're seeing as opposed to flipping through a magazine or something like that.
You know, National Geographic is probably the only organization I know of that not only supports the science, but then also supports the capturing of imagery and then gives you a platform to talk about these things. I mean, I'm at the University of Miami where, you know, we have lots of opportunities mm-hmm. to talk to people, but it's not this sort of platform that we can work with National Geographic, and that's one of the big advantages.
You know, I think so much about what we know about exploration, and you're right, it's married with science, and there are different teams. Do you see exploration staying in the world of academia, or do you see a world in which commercial or private interest get involved in funding what you guys do and how you guys do it?
You know, there's always been private investment in exploration from the early days, but, you know, you have SpaceX. I think mm-hmm. in many ways it's moving in the big bucks more into the private sector support. That said, the flip side of it, there's a certain democratization of exploration going on with the availability of what just a decade ago were extremely expensive technologies, such as remotely operated vehicles, drones, et cetera, that now anyone can get hold of. Hmm. And on top of that, there's organizations and structures where you can contribute your data to a larger well-organized scientific purpose. So the age of citizen science is here in a meaningful way. There's still a lot of questions and challenges to it.
Well, there's a lot of danger as well. I mean, I guess your services, because as an explorer, as someone who has done this kind of stuff, I mean, people are always going to need your services, even if they replace the scientists with different interests, right?
Yeah, I think the danger is less people who have a sort of genuine interest in contributing to the scientific endeavor than it is the GoPro. You know, I got mm-hmm. my GoPro, I'm going to get on YouTube, and I'm going to jump off this building because I saw a guy in a squirrel suit do it.
Is that something that you and your colleagues think about? I mean, the idea that you're almost down in this cave and you take a left turn and you could die, and then you're like, people are like, I can do that.
You know, I think the history of cave diving has been one of learning trial and error from accidents, from deaths. And the cave diving community and the diving community in general, they're pretty good at advertising that this is not you don't go in there without the right training. And truth be told, most people don't want to hack through a jungle. Most people don't, you really got to go
actual work.
You really got to go out of your way to kill yourself in a lot of the places we work. So,
the last question I'll ask is just, there's so much said about climate change and we have this, it's somehow become a political issue. You being on the front lines where you're able to see in the oceans, in remote places of our planet, whether or not there is any sort of impact in the way that we have treated the planet over the years. Can you say, I've been here and I came back and I can see the difference and I can understand climate change?
Without a doubt. And you see it. I mean, the interesting thing is I've been able to see it on the surface in many places. But more interestingly, and this is part of the research we do, is in underwater caves. One of the things we never think about, and one of the biggest impacts of climate change, is sea level rise. Mm-hmm. But sea level rise isn't just over the top of the beaches or the barriers or the walls. It's actually through the ground beneath our feet into our drinking water, the aquifers. So we're seeing saltwater intrusion in places that used to be completely fresh water. And again, that's our lifeblood, our fresh water. So. And then the samples, we reconstruct past climate from stalagmites. Those are the cave formations. And we see at very high resolution what's happened in the past. And all of that adds up to, it's changing rapidly now, and we know why.
Kenny Broad is my guest. He is in Chicago for a conversation tomorrow at the event called The Risky Science of Exploration, put on by National Geographic Live. He is an environmental anthropologist, one-time National Geographic Explorer of the Year, cave diver extraordinaire. Kenny Broad, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thanks so much for taking some time out. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.